Let's welcome today's speaker, Russell.
I could hold it, maybe.
No, there's two of them. That'd get complicated.
Don't complicate life. Keep it simple. I'm Russell, I'm alcoholic. Patty, thank you for taking this meeting. Thank you, Siddiqui, for asking me to do this thing. Welcome all the newcomers and people counting days and stuff and visitors, and congratulations to all of you taking birthday cakes at that cake orgy, was the phrase that was used. And it was a cake orgy, and I've never been to an orgy with cake involved before. I would have some hygiene concerns. This is an extraordinary meeting. I came here for the first time last week and was immediately enchanted with the musical component. I don't think I've ever seen anyone told to wind up and fuck off in a more elegant manner. Good work, Tim. Spectacular. It's a good technique. Those of you that are new, I remember when, like, I first came to these meetings, like how extraordinary I found it, and not in a good way, like not in a like, oh, this is salvation, I'm so grateful, in a, I don't want no part of this. I thought like that, I felt like my identity has very much been formulated around being outside of groups. So like anything where I'm invited to participate, I'm very, very suspicious of that. And I thought meetings were weird in England. I'm from England, conservative England. Meetings ain't like that. No one plays a fucking piano in my country. Well done for not dying. Well done for not drinking. We have another day. They've removed We Are Not a Glum Lot. This is a high density of characters in this room. Like, I've been here once. The fact is for me, is like, there's nowhere else in the world that I feel more embraced, at home, at ease, and loved and tolerated, like, than in like AA meetings. People I don't know. People have clearly got time. I'm referring to you, Bob. I'm guessing you got some serious time. He goes, hey, don't fuck it up. Feeling nervous. Helpful. Extraordinary conglomeration of individuals. I thank God that you're not out there drinking and taking drugs. I sincerely do. This is the damage you could do with birthday cake. Me, my favourite subject. It was evident that there was a condition long before the substance. Like, as a little kid, I didn't feel very happy. I hadn't obviously got no comparison of what other kids are feeling like, but I just thought, I don't know, they seem to be kind of merry and joking around and that. I felt like I was in some sort of aquarium of misery, that everything was outside of myself. And anything that... I was after anaesthetic from the get-go, from day one. I wanted things to make me feel more at ease. You know, like, sort of... Like, the way I ate chocolate and stuff as a little kid was not a normal way to eat chocolate. It was ritualized. It was excessive. I lied to myself about how much chocolate I would have. I had to conceal the consumption of chocolate. You know, I would eat it in a particular way, you know? Like, and I didn't like eating it with other people around. It's like, fucking chocolate. And like those kids that eat chocolate slower than you to torment you, I would take that stuff very, very badly. The way I watched television was not a normal way to watch television. I would watch television obsessively, very, very close to the screen, staring at it, yearning, longing. In essence, identifiable in me, before I touched even a drop or took a toke, there was a kind of yearning, longing, emptiness. I don't know where it came from at all. I'm really confused. I don't know like that it was biographical. There are details in my story that you would think, okay, yeah, that maybe that would give someone a problem. I'm, you know, from a single parent family. My mum was sick a lot. I grew up in sort of spent time in different places when I was a kid. I didn't have a good relationship with my stepfather. He was like, we're not allowed to call other people alcoholics. Oh, it's bad form. But I tell you this, that man drank alcohol all of the time, and it was the type of alcohol that's designed for people that live outside. You know? Should have come with a free umbrella. Like, it's sort of, you know, like, sort of, like, dense, like, lager, 12%. You know, like, sort of, serious, like, oh, my God. Like, you know, you drink that remote control on one thigh, extra strong lager on the other thigh. Heavy atmosphere in that house. I didn't like it there very much. As I was sort of adolescent, I began to eat in a kind of a peculiar way. Like the whole, like, I'm sort of very embarrassed still, you know, to sort of, I used to eat a lot and make myself throw up. You know, I did that for a while. Like, it's like actually, I always had to have some behavior that was a sort of a vent or an outlet. Always, always. There was always something thinking about it now. When I discovered, well, it's not, I'm not Christopher Columbus. Like,
that guy.
like pornography. Like when I first encountered pornography, it was like it was the delivery of a new doctrine. Like it was a covenant. Like it was a contract between man and God. Like, oh, what? Like I would. I loved those things. I loved pornography. Sometimes I treated it in a somewhat discourteous manner, actually, thinking about it. But in my heart, at least, I felt for that stuff. I was devoted to it. I was a devotee. There's something in me. I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. That is devoted to things that fixates and obsesses. And it happens so quickly. How like, so what happened was, is with these tendencies, with this inclination, is like that when, like the first time like that I drank to the point where I was prostrate, supine, flattened, battered, puking. Like the first time I was like 14 years old, I just, like, I have this thing in me, oh, what happens if you keep doing it? What happens if you keep doing it? Like as if I will find some new frontier. You know, like, drinking, and, like, yeah, and then really ill. And, that, like, the consequences would indicate, I think, to a rational person, don't do that. But to me, they did not indicate that at all. I thought, ah, that's all right. I was out of myself then. That was a little bit of respite, a little bit of relief from the relentless thinking, the sort of the torturous anxiety, so much of the body, not just some cerebral condition. It's not like I think I'm depressed or I think I'm unhappy. I feel it writhing in my guts, this lonely inadequacy, so torturous and agonizing. I'll do anything. To get away from that feeling. I'm a psychopath for it. I could become like a world-class assassin, I'm sure, if I was correctly directed. If someone could... if they could tap into that, there's nothing I won't do. There's nothing I won't do to not face that pain. Nothing. The first time, so each new aspect or emblem of my addiction, I greeted like a new messiah. For pornography, I fell upon my knees. For marijuana, I worshipped it. Like every single new drug that I took, like, oh, this one's the solution, until I got myself in a terrible predicament, like with the stuff, to be honest. I mean, like my sort of using in the end was like drinking the types of drink that, like, they would rather grandly in my country name them after Russian authors, like Tolstoy and shit, like, but it was not high quality gear that you were getting. It's sort of like it's one step away from cleaning the toilet that it would soon sully. And then with the drug and alcohol, the drug bit of it. I mean, yeah, I was like a crack house using with homeless people, type, like that. That's sort of, because, like, if you travel around. I don't know why I'm giving scoring tips from the podium, but like, homeless people know where the drugs are, you know. And they're quite reliable if you're prepared to score on their behalf. Financially malleable is what I've discovered. So I went to, like, you know, and Like, I guess, you know, we're all the children of God, and none of us especially belong in those places of violence and terror and mayhem down among the have-nots where there are no real rules. Desperate, desperate people in pain like me, people like me that will do anything to get away from that feeling. But I did feel especially out of place. You know, I used to have kind of unusual haircuts and dress in a peculiar way. Not like now, this is becomingly, is what this is. And, yeah, I'd be sort of using and scoring with, you know, like real serious people. I woke up in, like all of us, woke up in very, very unusual places. Like a time traveller, in a way. I used to think, like, how have I even, who are all of you people? How did this happen? Like in a room, so I once awoke in a room full of like refugees, like honestly, proper like people wearing like blankets and that. And I was naked as well. I was naked in bed with an elderly lady. It's true, this actually happened. You know, that's, the people that come to this meeting regularly will know that that is not an unusual thing to hear. People do this kind of thing somehow. Somehow these circumstances are contrived. So like, it was a lot of. I used to get arrested a lot. I used to have what will I say? My view of my own ability to be engaged in physical combat was not in alignment with the reality of that. I would talk myself into situations physically that I was unable to fight my way out of. It's quite difficult, embarrassing, because I'm very good at the fighting talk. Very good. So I would get myself, people think, oh, this guy's packing. And then they would discover that that I was just a sort of a blood distribution unit. I used to get arrested a lot, like sort of fairly regularly. Any given week I would be arrested. There'd be like my using and drinking was scored not delightfully by Tim, but by the sound of crying women, breaking glass, and sirens. Like, that is what it sounded like. Well, why are you doing this, Russell? What are you doing? Women frantically tipping envelopes of powder and pouring bottles down toilets, crying. Why are you doing? I'm like, well, this is not going to be an epiphany for me. What you've done there is created a brief financial inconvenience. The toilet bowl is an oracle for few. So, I mention this, of course, because it was like a desperate, desperate state of affairs. And I didn't, for a moment, consider an alternative. Not for a moment. I couldn't conceive that there could be anything that could make me feel different except for drinking drugs, and those things, after a while, they didn't even actually do it anymore. That's the thing, that was the real kicker, is like the drinking drugs had stopped making me feel better. They'd stopped working as an anaesthetic. They'd stopped being an access to some kind of escape. They were actually generating more problems than they were solving by quite a radical margin. I saw no alternative. My life became, you know, characterized by people departing, like people just like walking away from me with their hands up. Jobs lost, homes lost, money lost, things gradually leaving my life, deteriorating, me sort of in the middle, just holding very tightly to this disease, I went to a couple of meetings, and when I first went, I just thought, nah. Like, people forced me to go, you know? And I didn't get it. I thought, like, you know, if you're under 30 days, and unless you're one of them people that just blessedly has access to, you know, to the instant wonder available, like, I just thought, this is, nah. Like, when someone first said to me, you've got to try and get to bed tonight without drinking or using, I just couldn't. It was an inconceivable and ridiculous thing to me. It was just, I don't know, it was just like asking me to reverse time. It was like asking me for alchemy. It was not something I could do. Like, ow, it's 8 o'clock. I'm going to be awake ages. How am I going to get through that? Eventually, after like, sort of one too many arrests and incidents and self-harming and journeys in ambulances, like, people found out. Like, I managed, like, a lot of us to conceal. Like, people who knew me knew what was going on, but, like, I have enough people to hold my life together, people I could get money off of, people I could blag, lie to, sleep at their houses. One day, someone significant in my life found out the degree of my addiction. They insisted that I meet someone, like, that ran a treatment facility, a 12-step treatment facility in my country. And that, this bloke, Chip Summers, the ridiculously named, Chip Summers, a name that implies recovery quite strongly. Chip Summers! It's going to be okay. The person I used to score heroin off of was called Gritty. The universe is communicating. Chip Summers said, he asked me what I was drinking and using. I told him. He said, you need to stop now, or you will be dead in prison or in an institution within 6 months. I kind of thought, that's still a relatively long time. Why are we talking about that now? I'll see you in June. Then someone, very close to me said, you know, like, obviously, we have to come here ourselves. We need to come here on our own volition. Any desire, you know, any qualifications and desire to stop drinking and using. So, like, but someone said to me, you know, I said, I'm not going to that treatment center. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And someone said, you're fucking going. Like, someone made the decision for me. And thank God they did. And there was a moment after I had, like, you know, after I yielded my power, well, the powerlessness hit me. Like, well, for the first time in my entire life, it occurred to me, the thought, suppose you don't have to drink and take drugs every day. Just very quietly across my head like that. And then I just sort of, oh, all right. It wasn't like a grand road to Damascus epiphany. There weren't archangels and clarion calls. It was just a very gentle murmur in my mind. They took me to this place of delicate people, everyone sort of made of eggshell, brittle people. People loving, though. A lot of cuddles, a lot of hugs. I didn't like that. I was very fucking confused about what was going on with all of that stuff. And began to work the steps. No one gets, as they say, as my sponsor says to me, no one gets clean in treatment. We all get clean in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where recovery is. This is where my recovery is. One of the statements that has remained was when someone heard that I'd got like a week clean. I was at like in a treatment center. They'd give me this thing, Subutex. They'd give me a sleeping pill thing, which I took earlier and earlier each day. In the end, had it at breakfast. Because if you're trying to stay awake on a sleeping pill, is, you know, if you're denied all else, it's something. Someone heard, like, you know, like a mate of mine said, oh, I told this bird that you weren't drinking or using no more. Russell don't drink or take drugs no more. And she went, well, what does he do then? Because that's, like, become my entire identity. It's who I was. And each, as I said to you, each one of those things, each one of those, the tentacles, the tendrils of my addiction, I clung onto steadfast and greeted like a new messiah. When something came into my life that actually worked, it's like, oh, I ain't doing that. Like this thing, when people present, all you got to do is not drink or take drugs, one day at a time, well, you said, no, that's ridiculous. I suddenly became really introspective and circumspect. I was not like that when I was scoring. If someone gave me a couple of bags and a couple of rocks, I'd go, well, let's have a look at this. That stuff was in my body without any examination. This, though, the 12 said, well, are you sure? What if it's a cult? These people are weird. What's with the piano? Suddenly I'm a cultural analyst. None of those things worked for me. What I recognise now, extraordinary though it must seem, it does seem to me, is that through all that drug and alcohol use, I was actually trying to find something that I've found here, which I find here today, which is present in the sort of the gentle, mocking, straightforward, honest, beautiful, teasing, self-obsessed behaviour of the people in these rooms, is I get, through this program, I get access to God. I get access to a higher power. And I think that's all I ever wanted, was a release from myself, a knowledge that there was something bigger, something beautiful, something that connected everybody. And I didn't have the format for that. No one explained that to me. I need a very simple format for how to live in alignment with a higher power. I received it through this program. My sponsor is an extraordinary man in that, like, you know, now through the manner of my life, I get to sort of meet like swamis and priests and people that dress in curtains and turbans, live on mountains on a grain of rice. Them people are no good to me when it comes to dealing with this condition. When I've got a problem, when I feel ill, I ring up a bloke in West London called Alfie, and like he answers the phone any time, day or night, always knows exactly what to say. Normally he's like laughing about something that I think is really, really serious. Yeah, they sit down and I feel very hurt. I think I should do something. They're laughing at me. Yeah, and they just hear him sort of gently chuckling. He's never once let me down. This is all the more extraordinary because he's my friend now, and I've seen that in his own life, the man's a fucking idiot. But as was indicated, as he always says, you know, when two or more of us lot are in communion, God is present. There's a higher power present. Now, such a mystical statement would not go unaddressed and unexamined were it not for, it cannot be Alfie. It cannot be. It's got to be coming from somewhere else. That man's a lunatic. So, like, in a way, he is proof of God. At last. As I said in that beautiful documentary, my name is Bill W, I'm sure most of you have seen it, the bit that affected me most profoundly was when Dr. Bob reluctantly went to meet Bill W, the two founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, for those of you sort of standing at the back wondering when to safely leave. Bill W. knew he had to talk to another alcoholic. He just intuitively knew that he needed to talk to another alcoholic who was going to drink again. People weren't identifying. There was no AA. This was the inception of our fellowship. The two men met. Bob had said in advance to his missus, "I'm only going to stay there 15 minutes. Get me out of that room." Then the younger man, Bill W., spoke to the doctor, a senior figure, a professional, and sat down and explained, without revealing his own status, the nature of Dr. Bob's disease. And Dr. Bob said, "Oh my God, you have it too, don't you?" And Bill said, "Yes." And he said, "Something passed between us. Something passed between us." And in my recovery, there's been so many times where I've felt the relief of like, oh, they're in the same place as me. The biggest deceit, the treachery of my disease is that I'm in there alone. That it's just me on some precipice, and the solutions it suggests, death, destruction. Like, I mean, like, I will think, like, and still now, I've got 10 years now, I'm not so crazy as I used to be, but like, the gravity of this condition, the velocity of this disease, it will pull you back. Like, I feel like I'm on top of the world sometimes. You know, it's only one day at a time, and what you did today won't keep you sober tomorrow, but some days I think, come on, give me a badge or something, I did some really good shit. The next day we begin again. I suppose that's why those myths exist, like Sisyphus, who every day has to push that rock up the hill, only to have to do it again the next day, or like Prometheus, who is like on a cliff edge getting his guts pecked out by an eagle for his guts to grow back. You know, and that we do only have one day at a time. The simple fundamental principles of this program are inexplicably accurate, inexplicably profound. Like I said to you, I would prefer to get my God dressed up in a curtain with a bindi. I really would. I'd really prefer it came from someone on a mountain up on high chanting Hindu verse. Not a couple of Americans in the 30s saying stuff like, "That's John Barleycorn. We was fond of whoopee parties." That's where my God came from. This antiquated lexicon of Dust Bowl America. Someone said to me once, belonging to Alcoholics Anonymous and not doing the steps is like checking into a 5-star hotel and sleeping in the toilet. the steps of what makes this program. The first thing is, let's not drink and take drugs, okay? Let's try that. You know, that's terrifying cat poised above a bath, horror of, oh my God, I can't drink and use. But like, the liberty and freedom that one day at a time I have access to is because of the steps. And my sponsor says to me, there's no excuse. There really is no excuse for any kind of unhappiness, any kind of resentment. One day at a time, one step at a time. As soon as I feel unhappy now, I think, oh, wow, what's this? You know, like, let's do a quick sort of step breakdown. Like, the first three steps of this program, relatively easily. We're powerless. Can you do something about it? Yeah. Are you willing to hand it over a bit? Like, those three steps can be done, essentially, by nodding. So that's why step four comes as such a grueling gut punch. Write down everything that's ever happened and everything you've ever felt about everyone ever. And then tell somebody. But now I've done that, you know, and my sponsor now knows, he knows everything. So when I'm like, the next time, and you know, it could be, who knows when it will be, the next time I think that I'm worthless and my life is pointless and I might as well drink and use, I might as well be dead anyway, I've got someone I can talk to who goes, no, you're alright, you, I know everything about you, you're alright, you're alright, you're just an alcoholic, remember that thing, oh yeah, that's that, yeah, this is that, you wanting to drink and use and kill yourself and being all grandiose about your own existence, this is that thing, oh thank you, said we're all out there, you know. He said, well, every alcoholic in the world, we're all out there still, you know, in recovery or not, just chasing the buzz, just looking for the next buzz. Will it be a woman? Will it be this delightful silken shirt? For a moment, it was salvation, for a moment. And six and seven, the defects of character. For me, it's 2 minutes, wrap this shit up. All right. Like six. Anytime I'm unhappy, I've got to take responsibility for it. If I feel antagonised, like maybe Russell there, he's told me 2 minutes, well, oh, pride, self-pity, self-centeredness, selfishness, intolerance, impatience, greed, gluttony, sloth, lust, dishonesty, arrogance. Bang! The whole works. They all arrive. Envy, jealousy as well. That is a lovely beard. The 8 and 9 components helping other people. That's when you really sort of like, that's where this thing gets holy. Like when you have to sort of go back and make amends to other people and you can't like say, I'm really sorry I've done all those things, but you fucking done that. It's just got to be pure like humility and grace. And 10, 11 and 12, where I live, the better part of me lives today. A glorious way to live life. Accounting for things as they happen. Trying to maintain, like, I cultivate a higher power within myself as much as I can. See, as long as them defects of character are in my way, I can't be with God. I can't be in alignment with my higher power. Relieve yourself of wondering whether or not there is a... My sponsor says the only thing you need to know about God is you're not it. That's what he tells me on a daily basis. My sponsor navigates me back. When the defects of character block me from my higher power, I tilt to my sponsor, he navigates me back to that state of alignment. Then, horrifyingly, we only keep what we have by giving it away. And that's such a weird realisation. That I'm only really happy when I'm helping other people. I mean, I get like fleeting moments of pleasure elsewhere. I'm pretty far from a saint. But when it comes to genuine happiness, it comes from like this program. Astonishing. How did they do it? It's astonishing. So that there's no problem in my life that I can't improve by putting it through this program. There's no problem in my life that I cannot fuck up and make worse by not using this program. The most mediocre incident can be amplified in a moment by my disease. Someone pulls me over for a parking ticket. I can do a 10 stretch off the back of that with a few choice words from my disease. Fuck you, officer. What do you know? That, you know, it can be all over. Everything in my life, I put it through the filter of this program because it gives me the access to a higher power that I believe I was always seeking in the first place. If you are new and this stuff seems confusing and baffling, it is actually, and it continues to be. But it does do something else that drugs and alcohol will never do. It will work. It will relieve that pain, the loneliness, the anxiety. It can be lifted. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. You're all right. You're all right. So someone said to me, how many chances are you going to give drugs and alcohol? Give something else a chance. Give something else a chance. I'm very grateful to you, Siddiqui. Thanks for letting me do this thing. You said 2 minutes. I'm guessing it was around 2 minutes ago. I feel like my obligation is complete. It's not complete. There's an interrogative format now. I will now take questions. I will now... It would be curt and churlish to avoid Jonathan, given that he's in charge of the audio recording and could cut this together to make me seem like a right arsehole.
Russell, after living your lifestyle and being the person you are, is it hard for you to stay sober around all the people that you see on a daily basis? What do you do to stay sober every day?
My sponsor consistently reminds me I'm a garden variety... Oh, sorry. Thank you. Yeah, like if it's an interview, I get it. Jonathan's asking, how do I, with what he implied subtly over a number of words, was an incredibly glamorous and wonderful lifestyle, how do I stay clean and sober? It's difficult for me to repeat, because I've now got to sort of go, Russell, look at you up there, you hunk of a man. How do you do it? He then sort of puckered up his lips and blew me a kiss, which was weird. How do I stay clean? Because I like show business and all that stuff. Well, it's no different from any other lifestyle. It really isn't. I just make a decision one day at a time to hand over my will to a higher power, stay in touch with my sponsor, talk to my sponsees. It ain't no different. It's like, you know, like I could tell myself a lie. Oh, there I go. Like, I don't like those parties where people do cocaine, that fucking bullshit. It's boring. It really is. Like, I went out recently with a couple of people and over the course of the evening. Like, I began the night with a couple of quite interesting people, and then by the end they're just like morons, you know, like they deteriorate so rapidly. I've got no time for it. This is my life. I go to those things, I do those things, but I don't get nothing from it. It's empty. Like, once the veil has been lifted, I can't just jump back in that and think, oh, perhaps it's show business is going to be an incredible kick. It's just more glistening bullshit. So, like, this, you know, like, for me, this is the real thing. It's no different from anything else. The disease is no different from when I was dirt poor and had nowhere to live. Yes, mate. Oh, you're right then. This man has asked, what about anonymity and being a public figure? Well, like, at first, I didn't really understand the nature of the traditions, that the anonymity is for the protection of the programme. I thought, I'm not ashamed of being out. Everyone knew when I was drinking and when I was taking drugs, so why shouldn't they know now that I'm not? And then I now know that the preservation and protection of this programme is paramount. Nothing else is important. It's not a decision for us to make. My anonymity belongs to all of us collectively. So I will talk, like, you know, I talk about addiction and alcoholism, but I never talk about, you know, and I even can talk about 12-step fellowships, but I never identify myself in the way that I would in these rooms, because, like, what if I fuck up? It's not beyond the realms of possibility that I might do something very, very stupid. It's happened in the past. that could reflect very negatively on our program. And this reminds me that we are all part of it. The whole is what's important. The individuals within that whole are irrelevant. We come, we go, we relapse, we die, we drink, we don't drink. Who gives a fuck? The program goes on. The program goes on, so our anonymity is integral. So as a public, you know, I've got enough arenas to show off in. I don't, like, you know what I mean? For me, this is about my recovery. It's sacred to me. So, like, it's not a problem. But thank you. Yes, mate.
Which
character defect is most challenging for me? I think they come in such, like, hasty conglomerations. You know, they sort of... Like, I heard Sandy Beach saying, like, that pride is the sort of, like, the leader that hustles the rest of them together. And sometimes my pride, I can't believe it, because I think that I'm so humble in that. But then I get kind of arrogant about my humility. Like, my God, I'm humble. What a humble thing to have said just then. That's the sort of thing Jesus probably would have said. You're a bit like him, yeah, I know. So I guess pride, but like my sponsor always tell me, watch that impatience, because like he said, anything, like in your life, just sit the fuck down and calm down, because impatience, I think when you get a little bit of time, the impatience is what gets you, because anything will get better given a little bit of time, won't it? So pride and patience can really get me. Yes, mate. Oh, well done.
And I don't anticipate that it will.
Oh.
So I wonder if you could talk about how long it took you to get to a point where you felt like maybe the thought of stopping wasn't so terrifying that you could handle emotions.
Yeah, I don't care. He's saying he's a newcomer, he's all miserable, bless him. He don't think it's going to go, this pain, this misery. He wonders, he wants some sort of guarantee from us. That things are going to get easier. Well, yeah, what it is, mate, is you're not doing what you're told. I know that already. That's what it is. All right? So, if when you do what you are told, you'll get, I know it's hard because you don't trust no one. Why would you, them arseholes? They fucked you over your whole life. Why are you going to start listening to them now? I get that. But, this is different. They're only helping you for themselves. So you can trust us. See, what you have to do is, when you're unhappy, you just scrutinise the situation. Where am I not? Where am I? If you allow your disease in through any crack, the insidious little beast will devour you. So you have to close them cracks up with this programme. You have to look for where the application of the programme is. Have you got a sponsor? All right, little bastard. All right. All right. So it's been to a meeting today. What step are you on? You're on the second step. Well, it seems like he's doing it right. I saw you smile just now. I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I think you might be an attention seeker. This lady, then this man. You'll be all right. Just do the program. It's the same for all of us. We all have our stories, but the solution is identical for us all. If it works for me, and look at these fucking lunatics, it'll work for you. Yeah, this lady is asking how I felt at 15 days. I'm presuming this is a selfishly motivated inquiry. 15 days? Oh, my God, it was so horrible. It was so horrible. I couldn't sleep. I had to leave the TV on at night. I wake up so terrified. I was in that sort of treatment center. I was having, arguments with everybody all the time. I felt, all brittle and afraid. They took my life away. They took my identity away. These people are telling me, oh, just talk to people. Talk to someone. Trust someone. And I did not trust nobody at 15 days. I felt like I was in a lot of pain and a lot of sadness. And if that's what you're feeling, and I imagine that it is, then that's how you should be feeling. And I assure you this, if I can assure you of nothing else, it's going to get better for you. It's going to be all right. Trust these beautiful people that are around you. Lean on them. Let it go. It's going to get better. You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. If you're feeling all terrified, it gets easier. Yes, sir. All my ninth steps, this gentleman's asked, what was my most difficult ninth step? And how did I handle it? Well, does that mean that's the last question? Ah, okay, so it's retrospective. Okay, no. That was the last question. The last question was, well, sir, my parents were really, really difficult. My sponsor believes that, ninth step is something that's somewhat ongoing for me. You know, I mean, I'm meeting people. I've fucked over a lot of people, so I could barely leave the house without, owing someone an apology. I think parental amends are challenging because, because one somewhat feels justified in expecting that your parents will, look after you and stuff. But, my sponsor said, you just completely own your part of it. Think of the things you did wrong. My dad, for example, he weren't around when I was growing up. And when I did see him, it was kind of difficult. And, when I did my step nine with my dad, my dad drinks a lot, and he was drinking while I was doing it and stuff. And, it was very, very challenging for me. But I did it because now when I look at my relationship with my father, God is in that relationship. We have to allow it to be everywhere because we got no choice otherwise. Otherwise, we're out of alignment. So that was difficult. I did it with a lot of humility. I did exactly how I get humility is I do what I'm fucking told because I'm grandiose. I'll do flash stuff. I said exactly what I was meant to say. I didn't say anything I weren't meant to say. And I didn't get anything I wanted. I didn't get no immediate rush. Because I've done step nines, I'm sure we all have. Or some of us, where people have said something like, oh my God. People have said, no, it was me as well. And da da da. And it's all so reconciliatory and wonderful. There were none of that in this one. It's almost like going, yeah, you are a little bit of a prick. But it was, they're all good because they're for me. It's not, I suppose it's not like a narrative thing. Oh, that was a fulfilling conclusion. My narrative is now a consistent moment-to-moment relationship with a higher power. And these steps cultivate that. This program cultivates that. These meetings cultivate that. Thank you very much for that question.